Hello and welcome to SIPFA Speaks. On this month's World Health Day special, we deep dive into SIPFA's latest research project, exploring levels of preventative investment in local government in England. This project is supported by the Health Foundation and aims to explore local government spending on preventative activity. But to tell us more and to talk us through the project's aims, I am joined by Chair of the project's reference group and Chief Executive at NHS Business Services Authority, Michael Brodie CBE. And I'm also joined by Zachary Scott, SIPFA Policy Researcher on Prevention. Michael, I'll turn to you first. Welcome and thank you for joining us today. Please, could you introduce yourself and tell us about your role as chair of this prevention project?
Thanks, Jess, and thanks for having me on the podcast today. So I'm Michael Brodie, and for the last 5 years, I've been the chief exec of the NHS Business Services Authority. It's an organisation that many people don't know much about, if anything, but most people will have crossed paths with our services more than they'd realise. So we deliver platforms, systems and services with about £100 billion worth of funds flowing through them. So in essence, we provide business excellence that supports the NHS to help people live longer and healthier lives. And I'll come back to that later. Before that, I was Finance and Commercial Director at Public Health England. And for a year during the pandemic, was also interim chief exec back at PHE. So hopefully that little bit of background provides some context as to why when SIPFA approached me, I jumped at the chance to chair this reference group supporting this vital piece of work. I guess my role as chair is to convene, to coordinate, to corral and to cajole a group of experts from related fields, all with a passion for prevention and for making a difference to the health of the nation. So that could be senior colleagues, chief execs, finance directors from local government, from NHS trusts, from ICBs, public health professionals, accountants, economists, policy professionals, think tank expertise. It's a really eclectic but super talented group, and I guess it's my role to get the best out of them.
And could I ask, Michael, why does this topic matter to you particularly?
So I'm really passionate about the NHS. I think it's the nation's greatest institution. It fixes us at our time of need and helps us to live longer with the people that we care most about, creating memories. And my personal experience is that on a number of occasions, the skill, the dedication, the expertise of surgeons, consultants, doctors, nurses, care assistants, the whole care team meant that I got an extra 15 years with my dad when he was successfully treated for throat cancer, for a later cardiac arrest and a whole range of other things, actually. And that meant that my dad got to meet my son and see him grow up, and we got to create memories. So the NHS is hugely important to me, but, and it's a big but, so whilst the NHS is fabulous when such treatment is needed and when we're ill, good health is about so much more than healthcare. In fact, the evidence suggests that healthcare accounts for only about 10 or 20% of what contributes to longer life and life in good health. The rest is a combination of, well, obviously your genetics, but also the environment, living conditions and the behavioural choices that you make or are made for you. So for me, understanding that, how do we make a difference and how do we support other people to live, you know, fulfilled, long, happy, healthy lives is just really matters.
Absolutely. I think that speaks volumes. And same to you, Zach. Welcome and thank you for being here today. Now, your role at SIPFA focuses on research into prevention. Could you tell us how this SIPFA project came about in the first place?
Yes, thank you, Jess. So this project has been years in the making. In 2019, SIPFA worked with Public Health England on a project called Evaluating Preventative Investments in Public Health in England, which looked at the UK health accounts. The report concluded that the key to putting a greater emphasis on prevention is understanding the current position and the future implications of not investing. So in recent years, several organizations have put forward proposals for how we might go about prioritizing prevention, but there's a gap that needs to be filled that would strengthen and underpin the solutions. And that's the question of how much we currently spend. So we're really fortunate to have the support of the Health Foundation, an organization that is doing a lot of research in the prevention space and who is now working with SIPFA to explore this question of to what extent can we quantify preventative investment in local government.
This project is explorative in nature as a result. Could you tell us what problem the project is trying to address?
Yeah, so the project is very much focused on the question of how much are local authorities currently investing in prevention as it relates to the wider determinants of health. So the current SIPFA guidance on local government revenue reporting at service level does include prevention as a category for some service areas, but the definition and the application of the category is known to be variable. So there really is no standard set of publicly available data that would allow researchers to look into current levels of preventative investment at the local government level. So SIPFA is in a unique position because of its ties to local government to carry out this research by actually partnering with councils and analyzing their financial data on the ground.
And I know that SIPFA has, following the briefing, received lots of interest from councils, local authorities up and down the country, and the door is still open to participate in this project. What does the involvement of local government look like?
Due to the complexity of the work we'll be doing, it's really important that we have support from senior level staff, as well as political buy-in. And then when it comes time to actually looking through the ledger, we'll need support from finance professionals who will be able to help us map activity and identify spend. So it really is a collaborative approach.
Absolutely. And Michael, in your opinion, why do you think participation from local authorities is so crucial to this project?
So I mentioned before about how important the NHS is, but actually to life and good health, things matter more. So having a job or a reason to get up in the morning, having a home, good housing, having family and friends, all matter to a life and good health. So in short, something to do, somewhere to live, someone to love really matter. And also, so in terms of choices, whether you exercise, whether you eat well, whether you drink moderately, whether you don't smoke, don't take drugs, they all matter too. So as a general rule, recognizing that we've been through a pandemic, but people tend not to die as a result of infectious diseases as much these days. They die of illnesses that are either wholly or partly preventable. And that's why this project's so important, because those things are things where local government can have a real influence. So when I talked about having a job, local authorities can create the conditions in a region that supports inward investment. So if I look at Sunderland City Council recently and the fabulous investment they've had to create, to support film industry, that's a public health intervention as well as a fantastic economic redevelopment one. Local authorities have a role in housing, they have a role in social care. But also if you think of things like supporting our children to be active and healthy, that's a leisure issue. But it's also an issue around the environment and the obesogenic environment. With licensing laws, can you create a better environment with better quality choices of food outlets for children to eat? So all of those things that actually contribute to life in good health, that support people to make better choices, they're the sorts of things where local government can really make a difference. So understanding local government spend is absolutely fundamental to understanding how you support people to live a life in good health.
And I suppose this, perhaps for a lot of audiences listening, is a mindset shift away from thinking directly about the health and NHS towards these wider factors. Zach, when talking about health and when talking about public health on a wider level, we discuss these wider factors that shape and influence our health as building blocks. Could you tell us what this means?
Yeah, I think Michael has described it really well. So basically, the building blocks of health are all of the things that shape health throughout the various stages of our lives. And so they include a variety of social and environmental factors like housing, income, education and skills, culture and community. And local government has a role in shaping many of these building blocks through the provision of public services. And so those are the services that we are interested in exploring throughout this work.
It's quite clear that the NHS does face mounting costs and rising demands. We do see some worrying statistics surrounding the impacts of the current state of health. For example, that one in four adults will be living with a major illness by 2040. And unless we change course, the Office for Budget Responsibility has predicted a rise in health-related labour inactivity. And this would, of course, put pressure on the working population who fund public services. So to improve lives, what approach to health is SIPFA calling for?
I think it goes back to what Michael said about the NHS being a really strong and powerful organization in the country, but it can't do it alone, right? And so we need to find a balance. We need to reduce service pressures. And so in 2022, CIPFA released a report on integrating care and called for a twin track approach. So on one hand, we would continue to support acute services, but on the other, we would invest in the long term to ensure the sustainability of services and by extension, reduce the demand for acute services, as well as ideally improve people's health and well-being. So it's important to point out that this recommendation also requires an understanding of where we are now. We can't set a budget that would shift the balance of funds without knowing how much is currently being spent on prevention.
And Michael, I've heard you say what's measured gets managed. What will understanding current levels of preventative spend contribute towards?
Yeah, thanks, Jess. I mean, I guess it's a bit of an old adage, but probably still a helpful one. I've been involved in projects in the past that have tried to look well beyond the scope of this particular project and solve multiple issues at the same time. And often they haven't succeeded just because the basic building blocks for an argument aren't in place. So look, we've all known for years that prevention's better than the cure. Marmot, Wanless, many other, you know, greats of the public health field have made the case for engaging in prevention, for early intervention, for wellness, and we're still not there yet. So we believe that part of the reason why there hasn't been that traction is obviously because it's difficult to fund prevention and treatment at the same time, you know, ride two horses at the same time. It's often simply that it isn't clear how much is being spent in the first instance. So, you know, it's a bit like that old joke about, you know, how do you get to such and such a place? Well, I wouldn't start from here. Well, where is here? So to get the destination that we want, we need to know where we're starting from. And being clear how much is spent on prevention is foundational and fundamental. So from there, we can do so much more, but we have to get this right in the first place. So it's quite a limited scope, but it's a really, really important scope. We need to measure exactly what's spent at the moment, and we can build out from that later.
Absolutely. And I think added to this, Zach, I know you and I were just discussing the other day that ahead of World Health Day, the World Health Organization had released a statistic that out of 140 countries who recognize health as a right in their constitution, only 4 discuss or mention how to finance health. And I suppose this speaks volumes to the ambiguity around an approach to financing health and how much we are spending in different areas. On that note, what is the next step in the project? I can direct this towards you, Zach.
So we are currently in conversations with a number of potential partner authorities. So once we've decided who we will be working with over the next year and a half, we'll begin to co-produce plans with each council. That being said, the door is still open, and we encourage local authorities of all levels to reach out and learn more about the project and how they can get involved.
I think just to jump on the back, I mean, wouldn't it be great if this project then led to a change in public service reporting requirements so that people had to report how much they spent on prevention and that there would be kind of a race to the top? And, you know, and we might see that, you know, if we had a health balance sheet about how well our local populations are, that actually you could see that as preventative spend went up, then I guess the liability of the public's bad health kind of came down as well, and be able to draw that causal link. And that's why, as a finance organisation, CIPFA has a role to play in this, because the what's measured gets managed, all of that sort of stuff. If we can show it on the face of our accounts or in our annual reports, then there's a real likelihood that it'll gain traction that way.
I think that also shows the value and importance of local government getting involved now, reaching out now and joining this project. Can I address this to you first, Michael? What message would you like to give to our listeners about prevention?
Prevention and early intervention really matter. It matters on an individual level. It matters on a population level. It will help protect the NHS, reducing demand on frontline services, as Zach said earlier. It will help citizens live longer and happier lives. And look, even if you're cynical with this kind of thing, there's a strong economic argument too. Health and wealth are two sides of the same coin. A healthier nation will inevitably be a wealthier and more productive one. So whichever way you look at it, prevention is super important. And that's why I'm delighted to be part of this particular project.
It's certainly a win-win in that respect. And Zach, could I secondly ask you, is there a final message that you would love to leave our listeners with regards to prevention?
I guess the message I'd like to leave with listeners is that answering the question of how much we currently spend on prevention won't be easy. The alternative of doing nothing is, by its very nature, taking a stance on the future of prevention. It's accepting the status quo, and it would undermine all the recommendations for potential solutions. As placemakers, local authorities are responsible for many of the services that shape our health and well-being. By starting to look at preventative spend in our communities, we'll contribute to a stronger evidence base that will hopefully lead to more informed decisions and resilience, with financial resilience, but also community resilience. And I think that's why this work is so important.
Thank you both. Well, it's been a pleasure to speak to you, and thanks for joining me on Sit for Speaks.
Thank you, Jess.
Thank you, Jess.
That was Michael Brodie, CBE, Chair of the Project's Reference Group and Chief Executive at NHS Business Services Authority, and Zachary Scott, SIP for Policy Researcher on Prevention. That's all we've got time for on this SIP for Speaks World Health Day special. Thank you to Michael and Zach for joining us, and thank you to our listeners for checking in. Make sure to follow us on social media for more and to never miss an episode. Previous episodes of Sit for Speaks can be found on Sit4's website or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We'll be back next month. Until then, goodbye.